This week, we are rerunning the opera series that aired here on the Santa Fe Radio Cafe in the spring. The opera about which we are speaking today corresponds to the one that is being performed tonight at the Santa Fe Opera, which is on the web at santafeopera.org. They can also be reached by phone at 505-986-5900 or toll-free at 800-280-4654. We are talking about the five operas in this season of the Santa Fe Opera, and our guest today is Desiree Mays, international opera lecturer and storyteller, and author of the book Opera Unveiled, now in its 16th year. She speaks every night at the preview buffet at the opera. Welcome, Desiree, to the Radio Cafe.
Hello, Mary Charlotte. It's good to be back.
We're talking today about the opera Don Pasquale by Gaetano Donizetti. And this is, Desiree, a really charming opera. Mm. It reminds me, in a way, in tone, of The Elixir of Love, which was here at the Santa Fe Opera a few years ago, which was hilariously funny and very clever.
Yeah, he was an amazing composer, Donizetti. He churned them out. I mean, you'd imagine they'd sound very similar, but they don't. The secret to this man's success, I think, is the human quality and the care he takes with his characters. They're well developed. He always maintains a sense of humor. And in fact, he said about these operas, because he was prolific. I mean, he wrote 25 operas in 8 years. I mean, think about that. Today it takes 8 years to do one opera. So it was amazing. That year he produced three operas, the year that this opera premiered, in three different theaters in Paris. I mean, if you can imagine how big he was, a superstar.
Now we're talking the mid-1840s.
Yeah, we're talking this opera premiered in 1843. But he said a one-liner that sort of, to me, underlines it all, what Donizetti is about. Donizetti said, "Success consists of doing little and making that little beautiful."
Doesn't sound like he did a little. It sounds like he did an awful lot.
Yeah, but there's a lot of repeats in these pieces. It's opera buffa. It's a style that's fairly structured. And the characters can be very stilted and you know what's coming. In this opera, they're based on the Commedia dell'arte characters. The old guy who is Pantalone, the young pretty girl who is Columbine. The old characters from the old theater, of the street theater of Italy, are brought into these operas and given new faces. The masks come off, if you like, and how they're treated is very different in different operas. But he has a sympathy and an understanding and an affection that's in the music and pours out over the audience, as you experienced in L'Elisir d'Amore. There's nothing painful about any of these operas, unless, of course, you're talking about his serious operas, such as Lucia di Lammermoor, which was his big hit as a serious opera. But typically, he wrote these wonderful, light, frothy, fun pieces. You come out feeling happy, feeling good.
So this is an opera about an older guy, Don Pasquale, who is frustrated with his young nephew because his young nephew doesn't have the sense to go get married. And so he decides that he's going to get married himself to a young woman, even though he's a rather old guy.
That's right. Well, actually, he's doing it despite Ernesto. Ernesto is the tenor with a sort of typecast name. He's very earnest, this young man. He doesn't want to marry the woman that Don Pasquale thinks he should. So he is going to be cut out of the inheritance. And Don Pasquale says, "I'm going to marry a young woman instead." And that's how the story starts, with this argument, actually, between the uncle and his nephew. The nephew's been taking care of him, and he's in love with Norina, this young woman, and now the uncle is saying, "No, you can't marry her. I'm taking a young bride instead." So that's where the plot starts. I thought maybe we could play first a little of that argument, where Don Pasquale has broken the news to Ernesto that he may not marry Norina because he's getting married, and he is therefore cut out of the inheritance. And they have this little argument. First of all, Ernesto, who believes implicitly everything he's told. He's a little naive. He's very sweet, but a little naive. And he says, "Well, if I can't marry her, I'll have to leave. There's nothing I can offer her. I'll have to leave." So they have this little argument. Maybe, should we play that bit first?
Sure.
So let's hear from Don Pasquale and Ernesto in the opening scene of Don Pasquale by Donizetti.
Thank you.
And that is Don Pasquale arguing with his young, earnest nephew, Ernesto. And Don Pasquale doesn't want his nephew to marry Norina, whom he loves, because Norina's just not good enough for the family or something like
that?
That's
right. We're never really given the reasons. So if you want to get technical about why some of these things happen in opera, you'll never get an
answer.
Yeah,
forget about it.
He just doesn't want it. He's being stubborn. Yeah. I mean, he's a bad-tempered, irascible old guy who is made fun of through history. The origin of this piece, of course, is the Ben Jonson play, in which the old man, Morose, is very badly treated. They make fun of him. And it used to be, I mean, in those days, even in the 1800s, you know, the old guy marrying the young girl, everyone would sort of make fun of it and be very cruel to the older man, who in many cases deserved it. If you read the early plays, Ben Jonson's vicious about him, but the opera doesn't do that. It treats him as a bit of a fool, of course, but it's okay in the end, so it's not too painful.
Now, this story, this plot, as you said, there's the Ben Jonson story, there's an ancient Greek story. I mean, it's versions of this story have been going on forever.
Yeah, and they're still with us, I suppose. The older man marries a younger woman. I mean, we see that in the newspapers today. And it's always not always that way around. I mean, very often it's the older woman with a younger man who we call...
Oedipus.
Yes, and cougars today, right? There's a word in the vocabulary today for that. Der Rosenkavalier is perhaps the best example. There's all of these relationships. Baron Ox, the whole thesis of that opera is the older baron is going to marry Sophie, who is a young woman, innocent virgin, half his age, whereas the Marshaland, the great character of Richard Strauss's in this opera, she's the wife of an older general who's always away at war, so she takes a younger lover, Octavian. So you're getting in Rosenkavalier, you get all these various computations. Throughout opera, some are cruel relationships, and some are comic ones, and some are really touching, tragic ones. Take Tristan and Isolde. King Mark sends off for Isolde to be his bride. She's younger, and he makes the mistake of sending Tristan to go get her, and the two young people fall in love. And there you have that same situation again, and in this case it leads to tragedy, of course. But there's many computations, and it's still with us, and they wrote about it in the 4th century. In the 4th century, Libanus's writing was actually about how noisy and horrendous and troublesome a wife could be. It's advising men that if you want a happy life, don't marry a woman who is vocal. and they get into all that. She's a virago. So poor Don Pasquale in those early versions, there's one lovely scene where he builds a whole mountain of nightcaps and climbs on top as a little nest as a way of getting away from his ferocious, noisy wife. So that's the sort of the situation we're dealing with here with Don Pasquale. He's a comic character. He's made fun of, and he's really no idea of how he is being manipulated, but he is being manipulated.
Well, let's get to that, because so far we just have the manipulative old uncle who says, nephew, you may not do what you want. So what happens
exactly.
next?
Exactly. What happens next is Dr. Malatesta arrives. Dr. Malatesta, again, comes from a commedia dell'arte character who is made fun of, typically. But this Dr. Malatesta is an interesting character. He's sort of the amalgam of all of the characters that are in the Ben Jonson play. There were many characters in that. And he is the person who is waving the magic wand, if you want, directing the plot. Because he comes to Don Pasquale and said, fine, you want to get married, I'll find you a wife. He knows the situation with Ernesto and Norino and how unhappy they are, and his heart is actually in the right place. He wants to help the young couple. And in order to do so, they hatch this terrible plot, he and Norina anyway, that they will find Don Pasquale a wife. But the wife will be his sister, and she will come as disguised as a nun from a convent. So he goes to Don Pasquale and he says, oh, I have the perfect candidate. She's coming from the convent. She's my sister. She's very pure. She's quiet. She's demure.
So Malatesta, the evil good doctor, whatever,
yes.
pretends to have a sister.
That's right. But the sister, in fact, is Norina.
Right.
And the plan is that they'll have some sort of a fake wedding and that she will turn from being a sweet, innocent girl from the convent to an absolute virago. She'll turn the place upside down. She'll give him a terrible time. And he'll want a divorce. And the minute he wants the divorce, she'll be able to marry Ernesto.
But meanwhile, Don Pasquale thinks it's a real marriage.
Yes, he does. He's sort of drooling at the mouth and he straightens his sort of unruly wig and tries to get himself together when he meets this Malatesta and Sophronia, and that scene is hilarious.
Now, Sophronia is Norina pretending to be this,
that's right,
this yep. sister from the convent.
Mm-hmm.
Now, like a lot of the time in opera, you just have to suspend disbelief that Don Pasquale wouldn't recognize Norina.
Exactly. I mean, he's seen her before, but here
yeah.
she is again. Exactly. It's another suspension of all belief. Before we get to the arrival of Sophronia, though, Malatesta goes to Norina and they plan and plot what's going to happen. She sings an aria. That's an aria that was copied virtually, very similar in style to the aria of Rosina in the Barber of Seville. How she's vivacious, she's young, she's naughty, she's flirtatious, she's all these great things. So she asks Malatesta, she said, well, how should I behave when I meet the Don Pasquale? How should I be? And you'll hear in this cut, we're going to play the cut of Malatesta and Norina, how they have this discussion. He's advising her, well, I think you should be demure and quiet, and we'll see how it goes. So maybe we could play that. Maybe I should also mention the recording we're using today.
Yeah.
The Norina on this recording is the great Beverly Sills. She was so great in these bel canto roles. Don Pasquale is Donald Graham. Dr. Malatesta is Alan Titus. And Ernesto is the great Alfredo Kraus, we just heard in that first cut. The conductor is Sarah Caldwell, and it's the London Symphony Orchestra on an EMI recording from 1978. So let's hear now Norina and Malatesta discussing how she should behave when she meets Don Pasquale. And that is the discussion between Dr. Malatesta and Norina as to how she should behave when she meets Don Pasquale. That scene then goes into the next scene where she arrives at the house heavily veiled and completely demure and docile, and Don Pasquale is overwhelmed. He's sort of drooling at the mouth. He can't wait to see this gorgeous thing that's arrived from the convent. And Malatesta is sort of laughing behind his hand. He and the audience know what's going on. Finally, Don Pasquale says, okay, you must lift your veil. Can I see your face? And she says, oh, in front of a man, I can't do such a thing. I mean, it's a totally nonsense, very sweet scene. And she lifts the veil, and he's absolutely thrilled that this is the woman he's going to marry. So the wedding plans go ahead. And at that point, Ernesto comes in. Now, he's not been in on this he doesn't know what's going on. So he is sitting in a corner really eating his heart out, which is always the excuse for a tenor aria. And there's a wonderful tenor aria. He says, I have to leave or I have to go. My husband, my uncle is marrying this woman. He has no idea that this woman from the convent is Norina. He doesn't know at this point. So he sings this lovely aria. And I want to preface it with a trumpet solo. A trumpet solo is rather unusual at this time to introduce an aria, but it absolutely sums up his mood, leads into his eating his heart out that he's going to have to leave Norina. And to me, this sounds a little bit like The Godfather. Wait till you hear it. So let's hear this trumpet introduction to the tenor aria.
We're listening to music from the opera Don Pasquale by Gaetano Donizetti. Now, that was really cool with the trumpet.
Isn't it beautiful? Yes, yeah. A marvelous introduction. And you really get a sense of what he's suffering. I mean, you can suddenly put yourself in his shoes. The girl he loves is not going to be available anymore. He's going to have to leave. His big inheritance has also gone away. So he's unhappy. And this is a good example, I think, of the bel canto style, perhaps.
Yeah, let's talk about that. You use the term bel canto,
which means simply beautiful singing. Exactly. And this was the style that was so favored at the time. We're talking now, remember, Mozart was a classicist. His operas were in the style of classicism. And this now, Donizetti, along with Rossini and Bellini, write in the style of bel canto, which means the most important part of the entire opera is the sound and the beauty of the voice. Not that they're struggling for reaching impossible notes, or not that the story is important or anything else. It's simply about beautiful sound. So when you get a lovely lyrical tenor aria like this, this is a good example of a bel canto. The other aspect of bel canto, of course, is the coloratura sections, where the singers can do all these incredible runs and trills and embellishments, and they really go to town. And in those days, what they used to do, and I must say Donizetti had to put his foot down about this, is they would make up their own cadenzas, where they would sing the opening of an aria, and then they would run off with these trills and embellishments to show off their voices. very often they would take a cadenza from another opera and stick it in the current one, even if that had been a drama and this is a comedy, just to show off their voices. So by now the composers are saying, no, you can't do this. This is Rossini especially said, no, I've written it out and this is the way it is to be sung. But that's always a sign of the color, the bel canto style, and these wonderful sections where the singer takes off. But the voice at all times must be really beautiful. And that was a matter of training. The singers in those days were amazing. They had a much wider range, I think, than the singers today. They could sing 3.5 octaves, many of these singers. And they weren't bracketed into contralto, mezzo, and soprano. They would run over those lines. A soprano could sing in the lower register and a mezzo in the higher. And we're seeing that somewhat now today, but they didn't have those lines of demarcation in that time. So here, that's what you look for in a bel canto opera, the beauty of the sound of the singer's voice.
We're talking to Desiree Mays, author of Opera Unveiled, about the opera Don Pasquale by Gaetano Donizetti. And that opera is being performed at the Santa Fe Opera this summer. So what happens next? Presumably, Ernesto should have been in on this plot.
Yes, they're just getting ready for the wedding scene when he comes bursting in and he sees Norina and he says, I don't believe it. She's my Norina. What's she marrying him? But Malatesta manages to drag him aside and he lets him in on the plot. So when it comes to the notary, who is not a real notary, comes on stage to officiate at the wedding, he says, I need an extra signature here, a witness. So Ernesto comes forward and signs. The minute the marriage contract is signed, Don Pasquale says to his new bride, Sofronio / Norina, can I have a kiss? And she says, no. And she changes completely. It's such a wonderful moment here. He has married this ferocious woman who's going to give him a terrible time. She spends all his money. So between Act 1 and Act 2, in this production, it's a lovely shift. In Act 1, it's sort of a box-like house, and it's all closed up. The windows are closed, and everything's very tight, and it's very bare and spare and barren, rather as he is. But by the second act, when you get into it, the house has been literally turned topsy-turvy, upside down. That's amazing what they've done with this. The windows have been flung open, so the light is in, as Norina is there, and she's buying all these clothes and horses and carriages, and he's tearing his hair out. He doesn't know what to do.
Because he thought he was marrying this sweet, young, passive
exactly.
lady from the convent, and she turns out to be just taking charge.
A terror, absolutely.
She's being a terror.
And it's interesting how this role is played by Norina. It's a tricky role to play because she goes along with the plot because she wants to marry Ernesto. I mean, that's the bottom line, that they're going to get divorced and she has to bring this about. But she doesn't really want to hurt the old man. In the end, there's a sense of they have played this terrible game on him, but she would rather love him as a daughter, not as a wife. So it works out. Okay, but at this point, they get into a row. She comes on and she's fully dressed to go out to the theater. And she said, I can't be seen with an old man. I'm going with Ernesto, this young man. He can accompany me. So Don Pasquale takes a stand and says, that's out of the question. And then she loses it. She actually slaps his face.
So she's doing real method acting.
Oh, yes, she is, yes. It's a great role for the soprano. This is the high point, the turning point of the opera. When you hear, and I'm going to play you that section where she slaps his face, you'll hear it. And there's a moment of horror as he registers this and sings, it's all finished, è finita, Don Pasquale. Your heart goes out to him at this point. And she, as an aside, said perhaps the lesson was a little rough. So let's hear this, because this is when the opera turns. The fun and games stop. The music here is flowing. It's very sensitive. There's no embellishments. It's straight story. It's straight drama, if you like, as he is so deeply hurt, and she has second thoughts. Have I gone too far? So let's hear that little section.
Non si sorte. Sono stanco. Non si sorte, sono stanco, civitella, 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 civitella.
È finito. Pasquale, è finito, Don Pasquale. Hai bel romperti la testa, hai bel romperti la testa. Altro affare non ti resta, altro affare non ti resta. Ed andarti ad affogar, ed andarti ad affogar.
Is Sofronia, also known as Norina, slapping Don Pasquale, mm-hmm. and you hear the slap, and he does that kind of operatic crying.
Yes,
because
yes.
he's so hurt, and he's finished, and she's like, oh my goodness, I think I went a little too far.
That's right, and the strings take over. Strings are marvelous in a moment like this. Or the frothiness stops, and this is the strength of Donizetti, to be able to make that switch. It's pathos. You know, he writes pathos into his music, so brings the audience along into the situation, and you sympathize with Don Pasquale, who up to now has been looked at as a bit of a sort of a lightweight character you don't have a lot of sympathy with. So she trots off for the evening, and then as she goes, she drops a little note deliberately. So he picks it up, and he reads that she has an assignation in the garden that night with a young lover. So he gets together with Malatesta, and the two of them decide that they're going to hide in the bushes and jump out and catch the young couple. Now, the way they do this is with a duet that's required again for the bel canto style of patter, which is a bit like rap, where the two characters sing very fast to one another. It's very humorous. It's very funny how it's done, as they Don Pasquale is planning how to catch them, and Malatesta is agreeing with Pasquale, but he's also laughing behind his hand because he knows what's going on. The whole thing is a setup. So let's hear that, because this is particularly well done in this recording, with Donald Graham as Don Pasquale and Dr. Malatesta, sung by Alan Titus, that patter duet.
Il poverino sogna vendetta, non sa il meschino quel che l'aspetta. In vanno freme, in vanno arrabbia, è chiuso in gabbia, non può scappare. In vanno accumula progetti e calcoli, e vanno accumula progetti e calcoli, non si chi fabbrica castelli in aria. Non da di semplice, non da di semplice, che nella trappolata semitesimo, che nella trappolata semitesimo, non da di semplice, che nella trappolata semitesimo si va a gettare. In vanno freme, in vanno arrabbia, è chiuso in gabbia, non può scappare. È chiuso in gabbia, non può scappare. È chiuso in gabbia, non può scappare. La facciate sul tuo piede, se la tengo sul tuo piede, quanti quanti, ci appostiamo, ci appostiamo, di natura, di possiamo, tutto, 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 tutto. Che fabbrica castellinaria, sono di semplice, non di semplice, che nella trappola da semitesimo, se nella trappola da semitesimo, non di semplice, che nella trappola da semitesimo, si voglia parlare. Lo spetta, spetta, è chiuso in paga, c'è il gara, è il gara, è il gara.
that's Don Pasquale and Malatesta kind of plotting with each other, a patter duet. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure I'd compare it to rap.
No, no, it's just very fast, you know, very fast chat on something that's topical. It's the closest, I suppose, we have today. But don't you love those operatic laughs?
Oh, yeah.
Sometime I'm going to do a lecture that does nothing but look at laughs in opera and play them, all the way from Mephistopheles and his evil laugh as he gets the soul of Faust to this sort of laughter. They do a lot of it in opera, and it's fun. It's great.
Malatesta is really engineering everything. He's pretending to now conspire with Don Pasquale to catch the young lovers in
action. He's the puppet master, if you like. He's driving the plot.
And he's on Ernesto's side because Ernesto's his pal.
That's right. And he wants the young couple to get married and be happy and
get the inheritance.
The whole thing. And this is then, of course, what happens. The two young lovers are caught red-handed or whatever, and Ernesto rushes off into the bushes, and Don Pasquale confronts Sofronia and says, "What do you think you're doing?" And she said, "It's none of your business." And they said, "Divorce, divorce." And they get into, again, this marvelous, the music builds and builds as everybody is so frantic about what's going on. And finally, Malatesta turns to Pasquale and says, "You want a divorce? Fine. That's fine. It's not a problem. This is Norina." And he explains to Don Pasquale that Sofronia all along had been Norina and that the whole thing was a plan in order to make him see sense so that Norina could marry Ernesto. And again, there's a sort of another suspension of belief here, I suppose, because Don Pasquale is so happy to be rid of this contentious wife. He's delighted to be divorced, and he's not too upset about the fact that Sofronia turned out to be Norina and that she can now, she said, "Take her off my hands. Anything. You can marry her, take her." And that's what happens. And she turns around and has this sense of, we're sorry we had to do this to you, but an old man should not be thinking about marry a young woman because it leads to a load of trouble. That's sort of the moral of the piece at the end. And that's how the opera ends. Everyone's happy.
And everyone lives happily ever after. The young lovers get married. Ernesto gets what he wants. Everybody gets what they want.
This season we have a couple of happy endings. We don't necessarily have to end in death every single opera. This one is very upbeat. It's an opera buffa. So maybe we can just hear that final finale section. The opera really only has four characters in it, Mary Charlotte. You know, the whole piece, there's Pasquale, Dr. Malatesta, Ernesto, and Norina. It's only in this last scene then there are sort of servants in the house, but then there's an ensemble piece to celebrate the end. So let's just hear the finale of Don Pasquale by Donizetti. The end. One thing about these operas at this period, you always know where the end is. They end with a big chord.
Don Pasquale by Gaetano Donizetti. And this is a Santa Fe opera production this year. Tell us a little bit about the singers and the production.
This is a brand new production, actually. This year, the Santa Fe Opera has taken on 5 new productions, which is sort of extraordinary in this day and age to be able to do that. This is a brand new production. The director is Laurent Pelly, the French director, who has been here a number of times. He did Platé. You remember the opera about the frog?
Yeah.
That was such fun.
That's right.
And then he did La Traviata, which I know you loved, that production. A very heartfelt interpretation. He has this wonderful French touch, I suppose. Though with this, he says he was really drawn to the Commedia dell'arte aspect, the Italian street theater. And it's sort of rooted in that. It's, again, a sort of not a piece you update or change the time of too much, because the story works no matter where you set it down.
Well, wasn't there a production, did I read in your book, that set in the American West in the 19th century
or
something?
Yeah. And you can actually do that with this opera, I think. You can set it anywhere. It doesn't really matter. With our production this year, it'll be sort of timeless, I suppose. And it doesn't really matter, as long as she gets her frills and flounces in the second act, of course, which he will. And he wants to bring out the fun of this piece, and I think Laurent Pelly will do a great job with that. Corrado Rovares is the conductor, and the singers, the Don Pasquale is crucial. He has to be a great actor, and we have the wonderful bass baritone Andrew Shaw singing the role of Don Pasquale. He was here before and sang the role of Falstaff, which in many ways is not...
Oh, yeah, he was fantastic.
He was fantastic. It's not too different a role. You know, it's an older man who gets his comeuppance. In that opera, he's trying to flirt with the two mistresses of Windsor, the Merry Wives, right?
Right.
And here, it's not too different. Maybe he's got typecast a bit in these roles, but his performance would be a treat. And then something the Santa Fe Opera does so well, they use young singers whose careers are taking off. And when you want a young Ernesto and a young Norina, that's exactly what you get. I think the days have passed of where you get a rather middle-aged heavyweight soprano singing some of these roles, which can work, of course, if the voice is truly beautiful. If this character is about a really beautiful voice, this woman, the singer, it doesn't matter. You can overlook that. But today's young singers have to look, act, sing, dance, the whole thing. Singing is only one aspect of what they're doing. And in this case, it was sung, of course, in Italian. Their Italian must be flawless. And there are coaches at the opera that help them with this. But the four, the young singers here are Alec Schrader is singing Ernesto, and Norina is Laura Talescu. Zachary Nelson, who's suddenly made a meteoric leap to fame, having been here as an apprentice artist, he is going to sing Dr. Malatesta. So I think it'll be a strong cast with a wonderful director.
And we talk about this every year, but the fact that opera has become more like theater every year is really a beautiful thing, especially for those people who aren't necessarily in love with just the singing part of opera, but who really appreciate the theater part of it. I'm one of those.
Yeah, it's changed dramatically, Mary Charlotte. From the time I was a child going to opera in Europe, in Ireland and Italy or wherever it happened to be, where the singers were never really, rarely looked the part, and they would come on stage, they'd sing a love duet to the conductor. You know, there's a soprano and the tenor, and they would look straight at the conductor, follow his lead, and do that. That's all changed now. It's completely different. And I think in part due to directors, because, again, the few years ago when I was a child, the conductor was the almighty person in the opera house. You went to a Von Karajan production or whatever it was. That was how it would be defined, by the conductor. That's actually changed. The director now is the leading source, and most of these directors are theater directors.
Right. Well, I think there's another part that I suspect has played into that, and that is that the audience is no longer following along with the libretto in the dark. They're actually reading the subtitles that are on the chair in front of you.
Yeah.
And so audiences are very aware of every single detail of the plot.
Yeah.
And so I would imagine that they're kind of demanding that it look more like what the story is telling us.
Yeah, and as I said, in the training of singers, it's extensive these days. I mean, singing is the major component, of course. Languages, they must speak many languages. We're doing an opera in Chinese this season, and we're also doing one in Russian. I mean, it's staggering when you think about it. They have to be able to do that. So there's a lot of demands, but as I say, with these great directors who have a true understanding of the score as well, you can come up with some really wonderful interpretations. So the titles have certainly helped, and our titles go out in the language in which it's being sung, Spanish and English, and you just push the button on the seat in front of you, and it's translated instantly. And if you don't want to watch it, you can turn it off. And my advice, and it's been interesting for me watching over the years, the first few years we had titles here in Santa Fe, everybody watched religiously. Every line was followed. Now a lot will be turned off because people are more familiar with the operas. They know the stories, which, of course, is really the impetus for writing my book, so that in my book, or libretto, if people read it ahead of time, they know the story before they get to the opera house. That really helps because a lot of the relationships are so complex and twisted in opera. If you don't have a sense of what it's about beforehand, you're struggling intellectually to understand and follow the plot, and you miss a lot because if you shut your head off, in a sense, and just let the music reach you, it'll tell you the story. It'll often tell you two stories with the character singing one thing, meaning something else. You know, one character can say to another, I hate you, and in fact, they love you. The music's telling you the love. So it's amazing and it really helps to know at least the plot outline before you go.
And it's great that you said that because it's very important for people to start tuning into those little contradictions. The music is telling you one thing, the words are telling you another thing, and to feel that emotionally.
That's why we're doing this. I mean, it's a way of telling people what this is about, what they can expect. So by the time you get there, you're well on the road to being able to get it, to enjoy it, to be able to go along with Malatesta, knowing what he's doing, playing this double game along with Norina. They're having fun at Pasquale's expense. And we, the audience, are drawn into that. And you can understand that. I think two titles have really taken a lot of the threat out of opera. You know, people used to think, it's in a foreign language, in strange clothes, and it's got nothing to do with me. Wrong. The language can be got over with the titles. That took care of that. The fact that it's often set in another period is not a problem, I don't think, because the stories are human stories. They're our stories. I mean, we know these older people who might want to marry younger people. It's not such a strange scenario. We can connect with that and do with the characters.
There's not a year that goes by in which we have done these opera interviews together in which something doesn't happen in my life or the life of somebody that I know that corresponds to one of the operas that's happening in the summer. I mean, they are real human stories.
Yeah, isn't that amazing? And there's two ways of connecting. Either you resonate with a character, you're in love with someone who goes off with someone else. You could be in that situation. You really empathize with that character. You can personally identify. And the other way is you can be exposed to situations you may not have experienced, but gives you insight into what people you know may have. Someone going through a divorce. You may not have a divorce, but you see it in an opera. And you get an insight into human nature. And again, these directors and singers do a marvelous job in opening that up. And the music will explain what's going on. So it's worth a try, and this is a great great way to get into it if you haven't done it before. Don Pasquale is fun. It's a family piece, totally G-rated, and it's for everyone. I think you're talking about identification. Probably the classic example is Don Giovanni. I mean, we see these young Don Giovannis, Don Juans, in the mall when I leave here. There they are, strutting their stuff. So there you go.
There we have it. Desiree Mays, thank you so much for being with us on the Radio Cafe.
Thanks for inviting me.
We've been talking to Desiree Mays, international opera lecturer and storyteller, and author of the book Opera Unveiled. She speaks every night at the Preview Buffet at the Opera. The Santa Fe Opera is on the web at santafeopera.org, and the phone number is 800-280-4654, and the local number is 505-986-4654. 5900.